Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the War Report. Today's show, it has taken me, I won't say a super long time, but it has taken me a long time to decide to do this show, when to do it, how to do it. It's something that has caused me some cognitive dissonance, and we've talked about what cognitive dissonance is here on this show several times. I didn't know how to present this in terms of my own, I'd say, feelings, belief, and I just wrestle with it. And this past week, I met with one person, and I presented a series of programs, curriculum ideas, class structure, class ideas for new university program, and blah, 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 that deals with sort of the core of today's subject matter. Later on in the week, I still wrestle with it, and I think it was Thursday night I decided, what the hell, just do it. And so we put the show together and put it out, I think, Thursday night, the promotion. And within a minute or two, got a message from a person basically calling either the show, the subject, or me, or all of that racist, or suggesting that this was racist. And on and on and on and on and on. So, and then in terms of putting the promotion together, we're looking for a picture or something to sort of capture what the show is going to be about. And that's when we came across what you see if you saw the promotion from something that took place in Norman, Oklahoma, where I'm going to say a high school white male teacher was saying to his class that to be white is to be racist. That hit everything that I've been dealing with for a very, very long time in terms of an academic. And I decided, boom, to go with that title. And we put it on the website, both on my personal page and on the War Report page, so that people could see it and what have you. Now, when I took the extra step to say that all teachers, all white teachers, should undergo training, I knew that that was going to be hitting home in terms of most of this audience are white, female, and teachers, and some parents. And I'm going, okay, how is this going to play out? What it says directly is all teachers should be trained to overcome their hidden biases. Got that? I used that title from a Time magazine story dated February 12, 2015. And in the body of that story, several studies were cited that support the idea that white teachers are biased in ways that some don't even have a clue, and that the impact of said bias has great impact on students, and particularly the studies that were cited, black female students, middle school, high school, black males, and on and on. And I decided, okay, I will add that title because that's the crux of what I'm going to deal with. We have here in America a long, long, long history of racism. Racism against Native Americans, racism against white ethnic groups, the Irish when they came, Jews, Eastern Europeans, and of course, the African and later the African American. These are values, these are norms, these are beliefs that have become so much a part of American culture that in theory, super, super majority of the population, I'm going to say maybe upwards of 98%, 99% are introduced to these values, these practices, ideology from birth and through the rest of their lives. Okay. Now, said all that to say, let's talk about what I'm talking about more or less. And that is, when I was here, I'm in Buffalo, you know that. When I was here in July, August, I have mentioned this a couple of times, I went to a town hall meeting, and it was given ostensibly by a young African-American male who was born and grew up here in Buffalo, left for 14 years, college, and da-da-da-da, and had recently returned. And he was putting together this town hall, and it was titled something about the crisis in public education. But when you read the small print, it was being sponsored by, I'm going to say, the Northeast Charter Association. And so I was asked to stay longer here in Buffalo on that trip than I had planned to, so that I could go to this town hall meeting and basically to take him on. I get there, not very well attended, but there was this young man and four ministers, black ministers, and they all were going to talk about how terrible the education was here in Buffalo Public Schools, and they were all going to tout charter schools as being the answer. And also, they were going to lay blame, partial blame, for the bad public schools, the bad education that blacks, mostly black and some Hispanic and a large immigrant population, are getting here was due to their teachers. Their teachers don't care about the students. White teachers, to be specific, don't care about the black, the brown, the immigrant students. They don't live in the city that much. Most of them live in the surrounding suburbs, and all they are interested in is getting their paycheck and their retirement, their health care, and et cetera, and that's it. And that's what caught my attention more than anything coming from this town hall meeting. And so I have had, you know, many conversations with community people, with teachers, and I know a few administrators at the site level, high school, middle school, elementary school, and I know some board members as well here in Detroit and other places. And what I have said to said people was that recognize that when this particular group, the charter group, talking about bad teachers, when they're talking about white teachers not caring about their black students, that is what is known in political circles as a wedge issue. It's an issue that is designed to put a wedge between to individuals or groups, and et cetera, to drive them further apart. And so that was part of my argument. But then also, I would say that right now, in the last so many years, and particularly since the introduction of No Child Left Behind, this has become a political nuclear weapon in the hands of those who want to privatize public education. You know who I'm talking about. You know that they are against unions. They are against unionized teachers. And they want to, if they have to, destroy the teachers, professional teachers, and they want to destroy their union. And this issue of race is a very powerful, powerful weapon when used effectively here in America. In fact, it's kind of very easy to use it quite frequently here in America. So I'm trying to explain to people that it is being used as a weapon, what the weapon is, but at the same time, there is potentially some truth, some validity to the argument. And so I have been dealing with this, I just said earlier, ever since, well, first of all, I've always said to you guys, of course, I'm a 73-year-old African-American male here in America, have to deal with race from when you were born. Secondly, as a student, I started my formal study of this area, what was then called race and ethnic relations, in my junior year, which was the fall of 1964. I have been at it ever since. That articulates that well over 40 years, almost 50 years of my life. And as they say in one of those commercials, I've seen some things and I know some things about this area. And I'm doing my current work is squarely within this area. So, decided that, one, I'm going to make this a two-part show this week and next week. And first part, let's deal with what I'm calling a premise. And academia, maybe you want to call it a theory, a theme, or what have you, a premise. And that teacher that I mentioned from Oklahoma said it rather succinctly when he was saying in his class that to be white is to be racist in this country. What was he saying? Oh, and by the way, when that information came out, the parents in that town and people across the country, they descended on him like you would, well, I guess you would believe. The comments, well over, the last time I looked, was 150 and climbing. They were vicious. And I'm going to think all the comments that I read were from whites except for one black person who identified himself as black. They were vicious. Recall, I have said time and time again, and you know this to be a fact, white people don't like talking about race in this country. White people do the ostrich thing, put their head in the ground when the issue of race, the conversation of race, pops up. There are all kinds of theories for this, but it's a fact. And I don't know who's listening today. I'm not even sure if I'm just talking to myself, because it is such a hot-button issue, and I'm talking about potentially racism among American teachers, white teachers, which is most of the audience. I don't know how many people are really interested and will tolerate this conversation. Statement of fact here. Secondly, start with, I'm gonna try and paint lot of dots. I'm going to try and connect them. So you're going to have to hang in with me, because I could give a very simple version of this, but that wouldn't be the right thing to do. So I'm going to take some time here laying this out. But I will say this. What I'm about to say covers multiple disciplines in terms of theory and research and practice. Sociology, psychology, social psychology, cultural anthropology, political science, as well as history. And you know from our almost 3 years of conversation, I studied all of those. I double major as an undergraduate, psych, social, minor in anthropology, with a heavy emphasis on political science, graduate level, first master's level, social psych, clinical psych, PhD, social psych, sociology of education, race and ethnic relations, da-da-da-da-da. And so I'm going to pull from all of those areas to try and lay out this premise. And I'm going to use some concepts from those disciplines. I will try, when I think it's necessary, to explain the concept or define the concepts for those who may not be teachers or who, whatever. All right, now, what was this guy saying? He was saying that if you're a white person and you're born in this country and you're raised in this country, you are going to be, and he used the term, he just basically spelled out, say that makes you going to be a racist. Now that's pretty heavy. To be white is to be racist. I'm going to pause for a second and let that sink in. To be white is to be racist. Here's what he's saying. He's saying that given the over 400 years that whites have been on the shores of what we now call the United States of America, they have created a society and a culture that is, to a considerable extent, built on the idea that white people are superior to non-whites. That's nothing new. You probably already know that backwards and forward. White people are superior to non-whites. Also, in Europe over centuries, and as well as here, some white people were superior to other white people. For example, the English, the French, the Italian, the Spanish considered themselves to be superior to, in England, or what we now present-day England, to the Irish. They treated the Irish in England and in now Ireland like they treated Africans and Native Americans here in this country. Jews in Europe have for centuries been considered inferior people, people to be feared, etc., and how they were treated. When whites came in contact with Asia, they came in contact with Africa, and of course, they considered themselves to be superior. And that the reason that they were superior was X, Y, and Z. I don't need to go into all of that. Now, back in this country, here you have a situation where when the white settlers, or not, they weren't settled, right? Colonials came here, the contact with Native American. Columbus even wrote in his diary that the people were friendly, they were giving, they were inferior. and that if he had a force of just, and I think it was 50, maybe 75 soldiers, he could conquer an entire nation. That's how inferior they were. That's why some people don't want to celebrate Columbus Day all across everywhere. But there were others, of course. I don't want to go into the history, the 400-year history, but that's what I do in terms of when I talk. But basically, you know the history that blacks, when they came either, some argue, as indigenous servants, some argue that they were slaves. But within 40 to 50 years, there were laws passed, Virginia, Carolinas, all the colonies, that basically made the African and his descendant, African Americans, slaves for life, and their children would be slaves for life perpetually. In this coming about, there was an ideology that sprung up, and that was the ideology of superiority. Whites were superior to non-white. That ideology was supported by the church, the Catholic Church, the Protestant Church, and the king, the rich, of course, and on and on and on. So for 400 years, there has been this ideology. There have been many movements to develop scientific data to support the superiority of whites over non-whites, and particularly whites over black. In the schools, even when they were in rudimentary developmental stages, this ideology was presented. At the universities, as they grew up here in America, the Harvards, the Yale, the Princes, and et cetera, they promulgated this white superiority. It is so part and parcel of American culture and American history that it is almost invisible as well as visible. Now, what am I saying here? I'm going to go back to this young man's statement. To be born in this country, I'm paraphrasing now. His thing was, to be white is to be racist. What he is saying, and I've sort of like danced around it a little bit here, is that all societies, I'm going into my sociology now, all societies develop a structure. We call it a social structure. You can think of it in terms of social classes, if you want. You can think of it in terms of the five basic social institutions that I've talked about previously. But there's a structure to how this society is organized. Another concept is social processes. Within this structure, there are basic, fundamental process, social processes that are endemic to any given social structure. What brings all of this together is the concept of culture. Every society has its structure, its processes, and we can say how people are organized, how people identify themselves, how people, like gender-wise, what that means, social class-wise, what that means. All societies have a culture. And in its broadest sense, a culture is simply what people do, what this given group of people do, how they behave, how they act, how they interact, how they survive, how they organize themselves for various purposes, and et cetera. It's, in the broadest sense, is a culture is what people do, that given group of people. So you have three concepts here. All societies, by virtue of the word society, is an organization, collective of a group of people who share the social structure, who share the processes within that social structure, who inevitably have a culture that basically reflects how they behave. Also, in all societies, part of that culture is a belief system, a political system, a social structure system, and we can call this an ideology, all of which is social constructs. That is, they are socially defined perceptions, socially defined organizations, none of which is endemic to, I won't say nature, because I don't want to throw another word, but basically what I'm saying is that all these things are what people come to build, put together, keep together themselves. You can rearrange societies, you can rearrange culture, because there's nothing given. It's all socially constructed. Back to this country, race is a social construct. A lot of people want to see it as a biological given, that human physiology is different based upon race, and it's not. We, as human, 98-99% share throughout humanity identical DNA. And I'm assuming you already know that, and that there is no such thing as a black race, white race, brown race, red race, yellow race, whatever. That these are all man-made social constructs, social definitions, and rules to perceive, to behave, to evaluate, etc. The socially constructed artificial group definitions are just that, socially derived, socially maintained. They're social construct, nothing given in nature. Right. So we have this sociological approach. We have this cultural anthropology approach. There's another concept here in social psychology called self-fulfilling prophecy, one of my favorite concepts, is that we can define something as X, then we create a social structure, a set of social processes, a culture that produces what we originally defined, hence the notion of self-fulfilling. If you say a group of people are ignorant, and then you don't provide education, you don't provide a lot of the things that the defining group has that enables it to, quote, be more advanced, then you look out at the world and you go, see, I told you so. This group is ignorant. This group is industrious. This group is beautiful. This group is ugly. On and on and on. You basically create the conditions that satisfies and produces that which you said was already there. That's the self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a really simple concept, but it's also very powerful. And I'm hoping I'm doing justice to it, because it is really, really powerful. So, you look at society, you look at social structure, the processes that takes place within a society that gives it an organizational structure, or sort of like a visible organizational structure. You look at culture, and then you come to probably my most favorite academic concept, and that is socialization. That's the concept that, boy, lit me up as a freshman, as far back as my freshman year when I took my first sociology class in my second semester freshman year, this concept of socialization. And socialization is basically is how we train our children from newborn all the way up to fit in to society, to train them to believe, train them to perceive, train them to define, train them to behave according to the norms or social beliefs and requirements in that society, that segment of society, and et cetera. It's through the socialization process that, quote, children are turned into little social mini-me of their parents or their group or their society. And through continuation of socialization into adulthood, even through adulthood, through life, there's always this socialization going on, teaching you to have certain beliefs, teaching you to perceive reality, quote, perceive what reality is according to the beliefs of the group, be it the family, be it the neighborhood, be it the city, the state, the country. And it's how we acquire our values, how we acquire our biases, how we acquire what we believe in, on and on and on and on. We learn these things through our interaction with our parents, interaction with our siblings, interaction with our grandparents, our relatives, our neighbors, and a church, school, everything. That's the socialization process. It is so, so powerful. And if you understand it, you can go back and begin to understand yourself maybe in ways that you never thought of in terms of who you are, why you are, how you do things, how you see things, what you believe, and et cetera. And you can possibly begin to see things differently as a result of going back and becoming aware of your socialization, how you were socialized, and on and on. So, again, if you are in a family, if you are in a community, if you are in a church, if you are in a school system, if you're in a country that defines who you are, what you are, and it's on, et cetera, in racial terms, then you, in 9 out of 10, 9.5 out of 10, especially in the beginning parts of your life, you're going to absorb and reflect what you've been taught. And what this teacher was saying is that white people are taught this ideology from a white culture that says they are superior. And you can look around you and you can point to all kinds of things that provide evidence slash proof that this is so. This is true. So if you grow up in this culture, according to this premise, you can't help from being a racist. Now think about what I just said. You grow up in a culture. Remember, the culture is that big concept that encompass society, social structure, social organization, social behavior, social processes, da 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 da. It culture is what people do. Culture is what people believe as a organized group. So, you grow up, and especially if your parents and et cetera believe in the ideology, and they pass it on to you. Now, I can tell you stories from my own history as a child, and I have said some of this before, that when I was born in the area of Detroit called Black Bottom, and it was exactly what it said. You're black, you're at the bottom of everything. And my teachers, and I talked about this before, in kindergarten, first week or two, they gave IQ tests. Today you would call them assessment, but it was what they really are. They were IQ tests that were developed in the 20s, the 30s, 40s, to prove that white people were superior to non-whites. They wanted the scientific basis. And when I was given the test, it confounded my kindergarten teacher. You know the story. AM kindergarten teacher, PM. I was in the AM. My teacher got the PM teacher. She gave me the same test but different. Confounded her. They went out of the room, came back with a third teacher. She gave me a test. Confounded her as well. What it was that the expectation, according to the culture, according to the ideology, was that black kids, black people, were inferior, both psychologically, mentally, emotionally, physically, to whites, and that these tests would be proof positive, the results of the tests would be proof positive of that ideology. And as I said to you when I was telling you the story before, I crushed the hell out of the first test. The second test, I crushed it even more, faster, and more accurate. And the third test, I obliterated the damn thing. The third test was a first grade IQ test. They were confounded. They got over in the corner and they was huddled up and blah, 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 blah. They didn't know what the hell to do with me. The things that I could do at age five, just turning age five, because I think by 2 weeks, was stuff that they totally did not expect of a black child. Fortunately for me, they concluded that I should be promoted into first grade, maybe even second grade, as opposed to saying I was such an anomaly that either they were going to keep me there, or what they used that test for back then, just like they do today, was to put me in, quote, special ed. And I called it back then, what we called it was open air room up on the third floor of the building. You could come in and you go up there and you would never be seen again during the school day until school was over and you were outside. And it was feared that we didn't know what caused you to be put in the open air room, but that's what happened. So anyway, I was more than up to the test of taking the test and what have you. I did not conform to their expectations, and they didn't know what the hell to do with me. In our society, this ideology covers supposedly the full range of human behavior, human characteristics, human qualities. And, of course, the scale is that white folks are on the upper end of all of this, and non-whites are at the middle or the bottom end of all of this. And we're treated as such. This is what I think the young man was talking about, that for white people, you're born in this country, you grow into this country, you're socialized. Another concept from anthropology, acculturation, you're acculturized here. You can't help from believing that you are superior and others are inferior. When you look at the evidence, it justifies this. It really, truly justifies this. Non-whites live in poor housing. Non-whites have rotten jobs or no jobs. Non-whites don't speak the king's or queen's English like whites. Non-whites go to jail in huge numbers. Non-whites are violent. Non-whites are beyond ignorant. And non-whites are animals. Non-whites are, what are some of the other stereotypes that have been around for hundreds of years? And non-whites are to be feared. Non-whites are to be segregated. Non-whites, and on and on and on. So, what was this young man saying? He was saying that, and this is the leap that we're making here. According to this premise, to be born and to be white is to be racist. And since the super vast majority of public school teachers and private school teachers are white, then white teachers are racist. They're racist in terms of either being conscious of their racism and conscious racist, or they're unconscious of their racism and being racist. It really doesn't give you guys a whole lot of wiggle room, does it? I mean, you're either racist and know it, or you're racist and you don't know it. There's no third category here. And that's the bugaboo for me, because there isn't a third category. But sticking with this premise, and what I said earlier, and you know this to be a fact, and especially in urban areas, the vast majority of the teaching force, white. White females, to be exact, is, has always been, and for the foreseeable future, will continue to be. I pause because I want that to sink in. In Detroit, the vast majority of the teachers, white female. 80-90% of the student body, non-white. Here in Buffalo, I looked this up like the last time I was here. 80% of the teaching force, white. 80% of the student population, non-white. And I'm assuming that you know that as of now, maybe even a few years before now, that the majority of the student population is now minority-majority. And still, the majority of the teaching population, white female. Now, what does this say? Does this say that if all white folks are racist, isn't it by definition saying that all white teachers are racist? And they are racist of two different kinds, conscious of their racist or racial biases, or they're unconscious of said biases, but they're still racist. What do you say about that? You're thinking about it. Again, I'm assuming there's at least one person besides myself on this conversation. What do you think about that? I mean, that's a hell of a statement. And especially if you understand what I have said over and over again, white people don't like to talk about race. They do the ostrich thing. But now, people are saying that white teachers are racist across the board. And let me tell you something else. Back in February, March, April, when I was here my second time, I met with some teachers at the university, and they were excited about, they were developing a new master's degree program in education. And it's urban education studies, like black studies, women's studies, and et cetera. And I didn't tell them then, but I knew that the past decade, there had been this move to create this new master's program, teacher preparation program, urban education studies. And the unstated purpose of this is a recognition that white teachers have problems teaching in a minority-majority school district, school building, class, especially new teachers who, given segregation, another social and cultural phenomena, young teachers who maybe don't have any contact growing up with minorities, and maybe have very little contact at the college level, which is also very segregated still. They go out first year, second, third year, and it's an experience that they were not prepared for. So these urban education study programs, their intended purpose is to better prepare white teachers, mostly females, to better understand and perform in that environment. Most of them won't, or these programs, they won't say that. They'll say other things in terms of it's the realization that teaching in the urban centers versus teaching in the suburban centers are something that our teachers need to be better aware of because they come from suburbia, they come from maybe the middle class, and they're going to be teaching kids unlike themselves, and there's a disconnect. And they call this now cultural competency, cultural diversity, learning how to teach in a diverse teaching arena or classroom or school. Code words for, hey, learn how to be a white teacher teaching black, brown, immigrant, poor kids in the urban environment. So this is where most of you are going to end up teaching. Okay? Now, one could take a look at this phenomena and say, see, yes, there's a recognition that white teachers need to be trained more extensively to deal with a diverse student body, to deal with kids who are, quote, different from them, deal with kids who speak differently, cognitive development at that point, possibly, you know, different than theirs, and to better understand these differences, to be made aware of in your training as teachers, and to then in your practice, especially in those early years, so that you are aware of your biases, and hopefully we'll be able to reduce or eliminate those biases. My time is running out because there's only 4 minutes left, but let me tell you this. My first couple of weeks at UCLA, July 1972, I had a colleague who invited me to go to lunch. He was a black professor. He was a graduate student and PhD student when the civil rights movement, the students of 1968-69, erupted on college campuses demanding more black teachers, more black students, and more courses relevant to the black experience. Sociology department didn't have any black professors. I don't know if they ever had that up to that point. Anyway, they pulled him out of the graduate program, made him an acting, blah, 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 while he was finishing his degree. So when I come in, this guy who was, I guess he'd consider himself a black radical, and he wanted to check me out, so he invited me to lunch. Instead of going over to the faculty center, we went to the student union. And there he was probing me in terms of who I was. Was I a black bourgeois or black, what we call Oreo, black on the outside, white on the inside? Exactly who I was and where I was coming from. Whereas he was supposedly, I guess, the epitome of being the black man, the black radical, what have you. He made a statement that to this day I will never forget. And he said, all white people are racist. The best any white person could ever become is a recovered racist. Recovered racist like a recovered alcoholic. Once you're an alcoholic, you're always an alcoholic, and you can only achieve through whatever program you go through, blah, 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 a recovered alcoholic. And he was saying that. He wanted to know if I agree with that, that I come from that perspective, what have you. And I was looking at him like, you got to be out your mind. I wasn't buying that, all people, all, the term all. And that is what I'm really talking about now, is this question of our teachers. Where do you fall on this? Conscious, unconscious? Were you raised in a family, in a community where you were taught you were superior? Look, my time is up. I'm going to go, but Doug, I'm going to go another minute over. I told this as a sort of like a joke that I heard when I was a teenager about these two white professionals coming out of a bar dressed in their suits and their Gucci shoes and blah, 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 blah. They see this homeless guy, white guy. He's got one leg, one arm, one eye, can't hear out of one ear. He's a total mess. They feel sorry for him, and they offer him money. And as they are doing this, across the street, coming down from a given direction, this homeless guy, he realized that they were taking pity on him and et cetera. And he points to a guy coming down the street, a black guy, who was dressed just like these two white guys. And he was saying, you know, given my condition, I thank God I'm not black. What he was saying was that I can be poor as hell. I can have one eye, one leg, one arm. I can be the wretched of the earth, but as long as I'm not black, I'm blessed in this society. Okay, I was hoping people would call in, we'd have a conversation, especially teachers. That didn't happen. I'm going to, next week, go into some of, quote, the evidence that has been produced to support this notion that white teachers are biased and that their biases shows up and their students perceive it, the parents perceive it, and as a result, there's impact, longitudinal, long-term impact on their students because of these biases, and maybe even a third session. Maybe I'll get some people to call in. With that, time is up. Thank you, if you're there, and see you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.